Today on Seculo, Donald Trump and Nikki Haley face off in New Hampshire tonight. Will we know who the Republican nominee is when the votes are counted?
Keeping you informed and engaged, now more than ever. This is Seculo. We want to hear from you. Share and post your comments or call 1-800-684-3110. And now your host, Jordan Seculo.
All right, so we've made it to the first primary. Made it through the first caucus. President Trump with a big victory in Iowa. Ron DeSantis dropping out. We're down to two candidates, President Trump and Nikki Haley. I wonder how many people would have put bets on that one earlier this year that I think they would have bet Donald Trump would still be in the race. Would they have bet that Nikki Haley would have been the other candidate that could put that people even think, you know, the Koch brothers giving the $250 million over to the PAC and 527 think could beat Donald Trump? If you asked that a year ago when all these campaigns were just getting started, I don't think anybody would have put the money there. In fact, the Koch brothers didn't put the money there back then. It took a while for people to realize that. Now we get to kind of a make or break state. Iowa favored Donald Trump, and it did favor more conservative candidates. Even though he had not won there the last time he ran in the primary, he barely lost to Ted Cruz. Remember, it took a couple of days for him to even get those numbers out, kind of like what happened to Rick Santorum when he won in Iowa. It was so close with those caucuses. But now New Hampshire, which you have independents voting, you got Republicans voting. They're a little bit more moderate. Will Nikki Haley be able to pull off some surprise victory? Right now, the polls don't show it. People are voting in New Hampshire, so I'm not trying to tell you don't go and vote, because you never know until you start counting these numbers who actually showed up. We don't have a blizzard there like we did in Iowa, so it's a little bit different in New Hampshire. And then big decisions had to be made. Ron DeSantis already made a big decision. He didn't want to take another loss.
Yeah, so it's interesting here. Nikki Haley's already saying that she is going to continue this fight on to South Carolina, which is her home state. Although the polling there has her down double digits, 30%.
Yeah. Right.
So, but she here's the question that she's going to have to ask. If, let's say she's within 4 or 5 points of Trump. Well, then I could say, okay, I'm going to fight it on. And then she's got to decide in the next month, does she really go forward in South Carolina? Because it's a month away. So there's a lot of time for South Carolina. But that's also a big financial burn. I mean, the burn rate is millions of dollars a week. A little bit, just because of the ads.
You got to be ready for Super Tuesday. You can't just burn all that in South Carolina.
Right. So if she loses, though, by, let's say, you know, 20 points, I don't see a path forward at that point. And I think it comes down to the thing that Ron DeSantis people said, which was the right thing to say. You have to have a pathway, and you have to have the funds to get on the pathway. If you don't have the funds to get on the pathway, you can't do it. And if there's no pathway, the funds don't matter.
Right. And that's what, again, you put this kind of memo out when you're thinking, hey, maybe we'll get close but not win.
What does the memo say?
The memo, I'll read the parts that matter. While members of Congress, the press, and many of the weak-kneed fellows who ran for president are giving up and giving in, we aren't going anywhere. This is from her campaign manager. It's a three-page memo. We've heard multiple members of the press say New Hampshire is the best it's going to get for Nikki, due to independents and unaffiliated voters being able to vote in the Republican primary. The reality is that path through Super Tuesday includes more states than not that have this dynamic. About half those states do. This is she talks about going through these states, going to South Carolina. Then it's on to Super Tuesday, March 5th, where despite the media narrative, there is significant fertile ground for Nikki. After Super Tuesday, we'll have a very good picture of where the race stands. At that point, millions of Americans in 26 states and territories will have voted. They are trying to make a case to survive about midway through the states.
Here's the other
states.
Thing they're thinking in the back of their heads. One of these cases pop and it causes trouble for Trump, she's the only one left standing. I'm sure they're thinking that in the back of their mind.
Yeah, I mean, so there's some interesting
we'll talk more about when
moves
we back
you got to you gotta make here, unless you just get trounced.
We'll take your calls at 1-800-684-3110. That's 800-684-3110. Don't forget, if you can support the work of the ACLJ, we appreciate it. And if you can do that monthly, you become an ACLJ champion, a champion for life, liberty, and freedom. Go to ACLJ.org/champions.
tonight are on New Hampshire. Is it a big win for Donald Trump? Does that signify the end of the Republican primary? Nikki Haley is putting out ways it would not be the end and trying to say, well, listen, you've got the Nevada caucus February 8th, except she's not participating in that. So only Donald Trump can get votes in that. And then you've got South Carolina on February 24th.
But you know, I'm telling you what they're thinking, I think. I don't know this for a fact.
Stick around?
I think stick around because he is potentially, they view it, with all the litigation, potentially vulnerable. And she would be the only one standing. Now, like you say, you got to have the money to do that. And it may not be there.
And even lose your home state to do that strategy? I mean,
what does she have to lose at this point?
Well, if you lose your home state, I guess if you thought this is the only chance you had to run for president.
Isn't it for her? Probably.
I'm not really sure how they calculated that this had to be the time. But you lose your home state, it's tough to kind of regain traction again. It doesn't look good politically. I mean, that's certainly why Ron DeSantis is out.
Yeah.
And works for another candidate who got out like that, too, because they didn't want to lose a home state where they were a former governor like Nikki Haley, Jeb Bush.
Jeb Bush did that. And Scott Walker did that. I mean, we can go through a list of governors that have done this. I mean, it's
right,
kind
right
of a
when
governor
they get to
thing.
That, they say, you know.
Not taking that risk.
Right.
And the numbers in South Carolina are clearly for Trump. This is interesting. Democratic strategists, though, close to the Biden campaign, this is their kind of the two views that they're dealing with right now, are saying as good as Trump is at mobilizing the MAGA base, he's one of the best motivators of Democrats. On the other hand, another group of top Democrats are saying that the Biden team is too optimistic. James Carville being one of the main ones there, who's been saying that you're being way too optimistic and that Democratic voters aren't enthusiastic or as enthusiastic about Biden as Trump's voters are about Trump. And it is a get out the vote kind of situation. All right, we're taking your calls at 1-800-684-3110, 800-684-3110. Let's go ahead and take Barbara's call out of Utah. Hi, Barbara. Welcome to the broadcast. You're on the air.
Thank you for taking my call. My question is, what if the Democrats run Biden on their convention, put him on the ballot, and then switch to Gavin Newsom?
Well, they have a different, they can do that because they have what's called superdelegates. So at the end of the day, and I don't think it would be Gavin Newsom, I think it would be Michelle Obama at this point.
Yeah.
I think it would be Michelle Obama who they would put on. But having said that, yeah, they can do that. The Democrats, the president could say, hey, you know what, I'm not up to it health-wise. So then the fight would be between the Vice President Harris, and the Michelle Obama or Gavin Newsom. But listen, if you're a Republican, you'd rather be running against Joe Biden than any of them, to tell you the truth.
Joe Biden and Harris than Michelle Obama or Gavin Newsom.
Yeah. Or Michelle Obama and Gavin Newsom.
Right, that's right, yeah.
As a ticket.
Right. So I think, again, that is a more difficult path for Democrats. It's not like an easy set or done. Joe Biden, the only way that make it easy is Joe Biden would basically have to drop out. And it's still a bizarre situation because then you're going for people who haven't, you know, governed yet also at this level of presidency. I also, you know, like what's going on in the world really does, and in the United States dictates a lot of how this ends up when you're talking about voting Republican versus Democrat. You know, is it economic issues at home? Is it war around the world? Is it a mix of both? Is Ukraine still going on? Is Middle East still on fire?
All of that plays also on, you know, do you want somebody then that had the experience of actually running the government, or the federal government? And that's where I think it's a plus for Trump. But it's interesting tonight, this is where they're saying to watch out for, to look for, the kind of the four cities in New Hampshire to look for. Okay. This is the only way basically that Nikki Haley, and by the way, we're not trying to be anti-Nikki Haley. We know Nikki Haley. We worked with her at the UN. We worked with her as governor. She's a fine person and she's very smart. Manchester right now is polling 37 for Trump, 39 for Haley. I think that's their most popular
state. Establishment is what
they're
saying.
And then Nashua, 35, Trump, 43 is more for establishment, which is more the Nikki Haley. Concord, 28%, the establishment they think gets 50. Bedford, 27%, establishment 46. But the problem is DeSantis out. I think that vote went to goes to Donald Trump. If those people come out and vote in the primary, it's going to Trump.
That was a poll taken when you had like Kasich, yep, Jeb Bush, Marco, yep, Rubio, and Fiorina, yep, in it. And they said if you added them all together, which they weren't, they would have beaten Trump in those four.
By the establishment
those
vote.
Four cities.
Yeah.
But they weren't. And the thing is, going into this, right, Ron DeSantis was the other candidate. And his votes are definitely not all going to Nikki Haley. So I'd say the majority of his votes are going to Donald Trump. So I'm not sure that is going to be correct. I think she does have to do well in those places, Manchester, Nashua, Concord, and Bedford. But again, New Hampshire has been pretty good to Donald Trump. It was good to Donald Trump last time he ran for president,
yeah.
And he did not win the Iowa caucus by a few votes. I mean, I think,
you know, it's interesting here. We have an ACLJ member that I'm watching the Rumble feed here, says she's an ACLJ supporter. I know I'm in the minority here, but I live in New Hampshire and I'm voting for Nikki Haley. I cannot continue to support Trump's rhetoric anymore. So you do have that factor. I mean, these are good people on both sides of this.
Right.
This
is not, it's not really about issues.
No, it's stylistic. And yep. The stylistic, I think, for
that's why we have a primary.
Yeah. The question here is the primary, it widowed down very, very quickly.
I don't remember one widowing down this quick ever before.
Now it's like an incumbent running.
Yeah.
That's what it feels like.
It feels like an incumbent running against one other, like a Ted Kennedy type, you know, who like tried to make a play.
Yeah, I think
they get to like two or three states and then they're done. I mean, Gray on Rumble, by the way, he said, "I love the show, so I became a champion." We thank you for becoming an ACLJ champion. That means a recurring donor. He's chosen amount, Gray, that he's comfortable with donating each month automatically to the ACLJ, and we really appreciate those ACLJ champions that let us know so we can prepare for the unknown each month as well as the known at the ACLJ.
Yep, exactly right.
But yeah, I look at this, I say right now, I get the memos they put out. I've been part of these campaigns before they put these memos out these days. The truth is tonight, it's how bad is it for Nikki Haley? And you could flip that and say, how good was it for Nikki Haley? Did Nikki Haley effectively tie Donald Trump?
If she's within 5 points, that's a good night for Nikki Haley.
I think Nikki Haley then has to make the decision about taking the risk into South Carolina.
She's wishing it was not the next state. I'm telling you.
Well, yeah, right. But she's going to have to think about that risk and convince donors to donate serious amounts of millions of dollars to get her not just to South Carolina, but where she needs to win big before going into Super Tuesday, because it would not look good to lose your home state going into Super Tuesday.
Interesting. By the way, a lot of people watching on Rumble, so if you're watching on Rumble, we encourage you to...
So if this is a late night, it's a better night for Nikki Haley.
Yes, if it goes long. I mean, the one in Iowa, where they called it 10 minutes after...
It was on. I turned it on. I walked out of the room. It was already called.
Yeah. I don't think that happens tonight.
No, because this is not a caucus, and it's a little bit more difficult to predict. You know, votes have to come in.
Well, let's take something we haven't looked at. What if she pulled it off?
If Nikki Haley pulls off a New Hampshire win?
Yeah. Well, you've been in these campaigns.
Then I think all...
What kind of momentum does that give you?
A massive amount of momentum.
And money.
Money would pour in, maybe enough to take it to Donald Trump in South Carolina, and then it all goes to Super Tuesday.
But you're talking hundreds of millions of dollars coming in.
Yeah, I still don't mean that. That does not mean she wins the nomination. But what it does is it keeps her, like this memo says, that would keep her through the Super Tuesday.
So if you were her campaign advisor, what would you be telling her?
We need a win.
Yeah.
We need a win. We need a win or a tie.
Okay.
And a tie is, you know, 1 or 2 points. Basically, he can't claim victory.
And if you're Donald Trump tonight.
You want to win 5+. You want to really win 10+, but 5+, you won.
Yeah.
Because this is votes. This isn't like, you know, it's 5+ is still a lot of votes, and we know that Nikki Haley put everything here.
You know, it's interesting. If you're from New Hampshire, we'd sure like to hear from you at 1-800-684-3110. 800-684-3110. Yeah. We are seeing a lot of comments in our social media feeds from people in some of these folks are from New Hampshire. And people are split. Some are saying, I'm voting for Trump. I don't trust Nikki Haley. Others are saying, I'm voting for Nikki Haley. I can't put up with the rhetoric, or I don't want 4 years. Her campaign theme was chaos follows him.
Yeah.
The problem with that line is, not that there's not chaos. There is chaos, but it's government weaponization chaos.
Yeah, do we think this is just going to happen?
I mean, look at the. I'm telling you, I do think in the back of her mind is something happens in one of these cases. And
right.
Then she's the one standing. But you, like you say, you got to have the money to do that. You got to have some type of momentum. But you're saying winning would be huge momentum.
Winning would be the biggest momentum. Coming close might be enough to keep you in it and get your donors to stay in it. But losing by 10 or more, I think this would be it. Folks, and again, you never know. She might be willing to risk South Carolina. Maybe she's got a different risk tolerance than Ron DeSantis had, than Jeb Bush had, but most don't.
Yeah, and also remember this, you know, it's a bit of an open, not totally open primary, but independents can vote. But that's what the party set up as the rules. The Republican Party said that's okay to do.
There's more independents there than there are Republicans.
And a lot of those independents vote Republican. So it'll be very interesting. Don't forget, if you want to support the work of the ACLJ, we appreciate it. ACLJ.org/champions means you're going to support us for life, liberty, and freedom. We've got some major cases coming up we're going to talk about when we come back from the break. Again, 1-800-684-3110. We'll also give you an update on this immigration ruling out of the Supreme Court.
To Secular, we are taking your calls to 1-800-684-3110. That's 1-800-684-3110. We do want to update you, too, on a major decision out of the Supreme Court. Not a long decision out of the Supreme Court.
More like an order.
And it's, again, not so unexpected, because you got to remember, we've been fighting on these immigration issues. I know at the ACLJ, I mean, I think it's 2006, 2007, 8, and 9, on states trying to take a role when Democrat presidents were unwilling to secure borders. We did it, you know, Arizona made the case all the way to the U.S. Supreme Court. And ultimately, the Supreme Court agreed with a constitutional provision that basically when it's the border itself, it's up to the federal government, and states have very little role unless the federal government gives them the power to take the role.
So the Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals granted an injunction pending appeal on the barbed wire fencing that was put at the border. And the Supreme Court, in a 6-3 order, with Justice Barrett and Chief Justice joining the more liberal members of the court, issued an order saying, nope, basically the mandate is vacated. So what you've got, I'm not surprised with this decision, Harry, because in the Arizona case, the predecessor case back from about 6 years ago, the Supreme Court said, you know, those questions of how to secure the border, especially in the physicality of securing the border, really rested with the federal government. So I'm not totally shocked on this. What's your read on this?
Well, I tend to agree. The only point I would make is what we have in Texas is a dereliction of the federal government's duty to control and secure the border, which has exposed the residents of Texas to trespassing and basically to crime. And so Texas, in a desperate measure, has inserted razor wire. However, the Supremacy Clause of the United States Constitution, as well as U.S. statutory law, gives the power to the border agents pursuant to the Immigration and Naturalization Act. And so this was not a surprising decision.
Because the answer to this is the political process, Jordan, where you've got Mayorkas, the Secretary of Homeland Security, right now up on impeachment charges.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, so again, you've got a political way to go about this, which is, again, the impeachment. We are supposed to get the actual impeachment counts very soon. And I think the first one would be dereliction of duty, because that's one that has been decided and determined that that's impeachable. And then we'll get the other three specific counts as well. But there's also then this idea too of how much you can do then once you go inside your border. It's a mess. And listen, I think what Texas is trying to do, they're trying to protect their own people. They're trying to protect also these illegal immigrants who are coming in with no resources and no supplies. It's one of the worst states for it. It's also causing a drug crisis, a crime crisis, and it's been going on for years now. And I think they were just fed up, so they said, we're going to try what we can try, and we'll see where the courts go. And unfortunately, the courts have gone where they've gone for the last 20 years now, which is this is a federal role, like it or not.
Interesting, politically.
It's getting a little closer in the courts.
Yeah. Yeah.
The 5-4 decision, not a 9-0.
This was 6-3.
6-3.
Yeah. So here's the interesting thing. But the number one issue politically right now for both parties, I mean, when you just survey Americans, Republicans and Democrats, the number one issue is not the economy. It's immigration. And I think that says something too, Harry.
Absolutely. So it says that the border is now a bipartisan concern, a bipartisan issue. And interestingly enough, you are seeing more and more Democratic senators, such as Senator Fetterman and another couple of Democratic senators who are basically stepping up and criticizing the impotent Biden administration's efforts on the border. And so I think more and more pressure will be brought to bear politically on the Biden administration to actually execute its constitutional responsibility.
So ACLJ Action got involved in the Mayorkas campaign. Jordan, why don't you explain what we've done and what's happened there so people understand it?
We have a letter-writing campaign at acljaction.org, and over 6,600 people have written letters to their members of the House of Representatives, because this is focused on your U.S. House member, as that's where this stands right now. They vote to impeach ultimately, and then you go to the trial in the U.S. Senate where you've got to have the two-thirds, and then we'll have another campaign there if we get past the hurdle, which I believe we will in the House of Representatives. We'd love to get that over 10,000, because you think of those 6,600, those are hitting the 435 members of Congress individually. So the more that they hear from people from around the country, the better. And ACLJAction.org is right on the homepage. This doesn't cost you a thing. We have a pre-written letter that goes, all you got to do is put your information in, so it goes to your right member of Congress. We have a pre-written letter. You can use some of it. You can add your own to that letter. You can delete our entire letter and write your own letter. And again, you can send it away. So it can take you a minute. It can take you 2 minutes. You can take as much time as you'd like. And right now we're at over 6,600. We'd love to get to 10,000 before the votes start being taken there. I think the House votes are there. I mean, it's a majority vote.
So it's an articles of impeachment. Now, in the Senate, I don't think you get a conviction. Two-thirds, very tough.
I think in the Senate, it's tough to see.
Not impossible.
Yeah, it's not impossible. There are a lot of Democrat state officials who are very upset. Now, if they can weigh in to some of these federal senators and say, look, this is really hurting us, there is a possibility that by impeaching in the House and hearing from the state, Mayorkas could get moved out of the way.
He could just resign.
Right.
So that's the one thing
I'm causing too much problems for the Biden administration during an election year.
Yeah, it's a deflection, because if the immigration issue, Harry, is the number one on the list of concerns right now, and of course the election's 10 months away, so things can change, or 11 months away, so it could change. But right now that's the number one issue. The easiest thing would be not to go through an impeachment process. The easiest thing would be to Mayorkas just say, you know what, I'm a distraction. Just as Jordan said, I'm a distraction here, because this immigration situation is a mess.
Absolutely. And so if you look at the city of Chicago, which is a left wing, so-called progressive city, more and more residents in Chicago are becoming upset, and basically they are coming out against the mayor of Chicago, and they are left-wingers themselves, but they're saying this type of immigration, illegal immigration, which is overwhelming the resources of Chicago, it's unsustainable. It's unsustainable in New York, Baltimore, Philadelphia, and many other American cities. And so I think pressure will be brought to bear on the Biden administration to do something.
All right, the ACLJ fully involved in all of this, of course, and we've got FOIA litigation going on with DHS. We're on top of the situation. Protecting the borders is something very, very important to us and our legal work here at the American Center for Law and Justice.
A reason why we want you to become, again, an ACLJ champion. We've heard from ACLJ champions today in the chats and on the phones. An ACLJ champion is someone who chooses an amount they're comfortable with automatically donating each month to the ACLJ. Is that $50? Is it $25 or $100? And it automatically donates, so you're donating that month to that amount to the ACLJ. It's easy to do at ACLJ.org. You'll see it right on the homepage. And our champions, you're at the tip of the spear, because we know those resources are going to be available for us each month, whether we are working on an issue that we were already spending resources on, or a brand new issue that we didn't even know was coming. Ready to go because of ACLJ champions. Donate today. Become a champion at ACLJ.org. We'll be back second half hour.
Keeping you informed and engaged. Now more than ever. This is Seculo. And now your host, Jordan Seculo.
Today is a very important day in the Republican primary, and that's because even though it's only the first primary, we are down to two candidates after the Iowa caucus. Donald Trump, who won the Iowa caucus with a big number, that was the first one since 1972, and it was the first in the nation vote or caucus to get above 50%. Nikki Haley has carried on. Ron DeSantis has left the race. So has Vivek Ramaswamy. He endorsed President Trump and is actually on the campaign trail today with President Trump. So are a number of members of Congress and people you would know in the political world are up in New Hampshire. Why is New Hampshire so important? Well, if Donald Trump has a big victory tonight, like he did in Iowa, in a state with very different voters, much more moderate voters, and different than Midwest voters, talking about Northeast Republican voters. If he has a big win tonight, though Nikki Haley's campaign won't say it right now because people are voting.
And Ron DeSantis didn't either and pulled out.
Yeah. Is that if Donald Trump has a pretty big victory tonight, it's tough for Nikki Haley to continue. So this could be a big night because it technically could be the end of the primary for the Republican Party, and Donald Trump could be the presumptive nominee. Now, there's a lot of ifs, ands, or buts there.
Because I thought your analysis was interesting if Nikki Haley were to pull it out tonight.
Well, then things change significantly. It's not that she's going to win the primary, but she certainly, Donald Trump will then go into Nevada. He'll get those votes because she didn't sign up for the caucus.
Right.
Then you'll go to South Carolina. She'll be able to, you would think, if she wins tonight, be able to raise the money necessary to make that very close. And that's probably a deciding factor. If you lose your home state, do you go into Super Tuesday? Now, if you lose it by one or two, maybe you do. But if you lose it by 10 or 20, you don't. Now, I think that's, again, a little bit of a dream scenario.
I think my theory, though, also with, I think part of her campaign is it also it's dependent upon whether she has the resources, is something happens to Donald Trump legally. I mean, that's, I think, what's in the back of her mind is if she can stay close. And if she doesn't stay close, it's not going to matter.
Right.
Let's go ahead. We're taking phone calls. We'll take phone calls. We got a full bank of calls right now. Let's go ahead and we got a New Hampshire call. Let's take Ken on line four.
Yeah, Ken in New Hampshire on line four. Hey, Ken.
Hi. So I'm actually at the polling place right now. I'm an ACLJ champion.
We appreciate
and,
that.
Thank you. And as a Christian, I'm voting for Nikki Haley because I just can't take what I'm hearing from Donald Trump in my own state. And it's come close to home, and I'm hearing rhetoric from him, and I just can't vote for him as a Christian. And I did for the past 2 years, the past two elections.
Yeah.
And we just can't again. And that's sort of what I wanted to mention.
Yeah, I mean, I think there is certainly, and we appreciate you calling in, Ken, and appreciate your support of the ACLJ. I think this is an issue.
Trump fatigue.
The fatigue factor, because it's now going on 12 years. Yeah. It's been, I mean, if he were to win, this would be a 12 years, a decade and a third.
Yeah.
I mean, so that's a factor.
It is. But what we learned in Iowa is that it wasn't much of one.
Yeah. So we'll see. But
and I understand why some people feel that way. The question is, do enough people feel that way? That these other candidates are tough enough, and are they prepared to deal with the world we live in right now?
And the weaponized government. Which I think whoever is next president tries to fix. But let me tell you, as somebody that has dealt with
this. They'll come after Nikki Haley, too.
Of course they will.
They tried to do it in South Carolina when she was governor, remember?
Yeah.
So imagine what they do over the federal government.
Yeah. So, I mean, you got to have a certain moxie is...
You got to have guts.
When your grandfather used to say,
you got to be willing to have your back up against the wall.
And
sometimes
fight back when
Donald Trump's back up against the wall is when he fights back best. But that can come with some language that... has pushed people. They just don't know if they can handle it, like the caller said.
Yeah. We're going to find out tonight. All right, we're taking your calls, 1-800-684-3110. Support the work of the ACLJ, like the caller just said. As an ACLJ champion, it means you're donating monthly to the ACLJ for life, liberty, and freedom. Go to aclj.org/champions. We will take more of your phone calls when we come back from the break at 1-800-684-3110. We're going to give you an update later in the program about some cases in Pakistan that our team's dealing with. And our European Center for Law and Justice is in Spain working on the hostage situation. We'll have an update on Israel as well.
Now we go back. We're
to take more of your phone calls at 1-800-684-3110. I want to go right to New Hampshire with Pat on line 5 because, again, more calls from New Hampshire, the better, to learn what's going on there. Hey, Pat.
Hi. Yeah, I voted this morning, and I live in a small town. I found it very difficult to get out of the polling place for all of the independents signing back up to be unassigned again.
Yeah, and because in New Hampshire you're allowed to do that, but and your polling place was pretty packed?
Yes, and I live in a small town, and it was like 9 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah, that's what, I mean, look, the party rules allow it, the New Hampshire law allows it, so it's going to depend where these...
So when you say they were signing back, so they go in, they vote as they're an independent, then they decide to vote in the Republican primary, and then after they vote, they go back and sign up as unassigned again?
Yeah.
So it's a 1-2-3 move.
Yeah, and they're allowed under New Hampshire law. It's very rare that they can do this.
You're already back to being independent.
And is that slowing... How's it affecting your timing of getting in and out of the bowling, the ballot box?
It was fairly smooth going in, signing in, getting a ballot, voting, and then getting my thing into the machine. But as far as getting out of the building, there was a line turned around almost back to where you put in the ballot of people waiting to sign back up to be unassigned.
That's where you said that it could be
interesting. That's, again, you can't.
Is that a good sign for Nikki Haley?
You know, in most states you could say yes, but in New Hampshire, so many people are independent.
42%.
That Donald Trump does well amongst independents too there.
Yeah.
And so independents aren't all the same independents in New Hampshire. So I think, listen, the more independents that are voting is probably better for Nikki Haley. I don't know if, it's not like she's winning 7 out of 10 of those. That would be shocking.
Yeah. Dion's calling from Washington. We're taking your calls at 800-684-3110. Dion, welcome to the broadcast. You're on the air.
Hello, Jay. How are you?
I'm great.
Thank you for taking my call, sir.
Sure.
I don't know if this should be speculation or scenario, but I think if Nikki Haley comes in closer in New Hampshire to Trump, that would probably give her incentive to, well, go to her own state, which I guess she's planning to do. And depending on, you know, how New Hampshire does, she might fare better in her home state. And I think she's going to stick in, and I think she's going to. We need a debate. We need a debate. And
well, Dion, that's a really good question. So if she, let's say she wins, which is not likely based on the polling, but the polling could be totally wrong.
Yep.
If she were to win, and you said she gets all the money, what about the debate factor at that point?
I think you'd have to rethink it if you're Donald Trump.
Iowa was Trump. New Hampshire was. Was Haley, if it went that way, Haley, I don't see that number right now, but who knows? Then do you have to do a debate, which he does not want to do, and I don't think, I think Nikki Haley does want to do.
Yeah, I think you have to rethink it if you're Donald Trump. I mean, again, you'd say, okay, she's going to go into our home state. I wasn't able to win this in New Hampshire. Can I put an end to this in South Carolina?
Well, if she won New Hampshire or
was
close.
Right. Yeah. So he's thinking, I wasn't able to put an end to this New Hampshire. Could I put it into it in South Carolina and beat her in her own state? Is doing a debate worth, is that going to be more helpful than that? I think they'll just have to start, you know, discussing that. I don't think any decisions are going to be made today about that. I think the only decision that can be made today is if Donald Trump wins, is whether Nikki Haley has any chance in moving forward in this election.
Yeah. All right, we're taking your calls, 800-684-3110. Anthony, Pennsylvania. Anthony, go ahead.
I hear from a lot of people upset that we only have a two-party system, yet the media completely ignores Jill Stein over on the Green Party. There's almost zero coverage of Kennedy, and they're not even reporting on Dean Phillips and the other couple people that are trying to get on the Democrat ticket. And it shows that the media is 100% behind Biden, that they're doing a great disservice by not reporting on other voices.
You know, I think that there was a lot of reporting on Kennedy, and I think
early
one
on
of the
especially.
Issues that they face the media is that those parties don't have these kind of major contested primaries where hundreds of millions of dollars are spent. So it's not as interesting for the for the networks to put out 10 correspondents in Iowa and 10 in New Hampshire and 10 in South Carolina. And let me tell you what the media doesn't want. The media does not want this primary to be over tonight. I will tell you that. If you're, I don't care if you're MSNBC or Fox News. If the primary is over tonight, effectively for the Republicans, and there's no primary on the Democrat side, I mean, the general election starts next week. That technically
would be the longest general election in U.S. history, I think.
Yeah, I mean, it won't
and certainly in the modern
be,
time.
But I mean, it really would be effectively a general election starting like this week.
How you've run those kind of campaigns, you've been involved in heavy in those campaigns. The money expenditure, if you're having to do a general election starting in February, would be.
It's interesting. Do you just go quiet for a while? Does everybody just kind of.
What do you. Well, I was going to ask you what you thought about that. Do they?
You could.
Let everybody catch their breath.
Yeah. You could catch your breath, reassemble your team, look at some of the other candidates and the people that they had that were good and say, okay, maybe, hey, that guy was really good on that team. We should get him on our team.
Does that happen a lot?
It happened a lot before Donald Trump. Now, Donald Trump is pretty much sticks with his team. But that doesn't mean he doesn't see talent in other places. So if he said, you know, that they did pretty good, or that Ramaswamy team was able to take a guy from nowhere, and that was pretty interesting. So maybe I want to use some of his digital team, things like that. It does give you the time. It would give you way more time to put that together. It would also give you a lot of time to fundraise.
Yeah.
I mean, you basically have unlimited time to fundraise. But guess who else does then? Joe Biden.
Right, and he's raising a lot of money.
Because they're going to know, too, that you've got that time. Now, he's got to still be president of the United States,
yep.
But he'll tie every official event to a fundraising event.
All right, let's take Robin out of Virginia on line one. We're taking your calls at 800-684-3110. Full bank of calls right now. There'll be lines opening up shortly, though. Robin, go ahead. You're on the air.
Hey, guys. My question is, if Nikki Haley should pull out for whatever reason and Trump does get disqualified, where are we at that point?
Well, you know, he's not going to get. I'm holding in my hand the brief on the disqualification case. I hate calling predictions on Supreme Court cases because notoriously things can happen. But just after living with these briefs for 2 weeks every day, 20 hours a day, getting ready to do the reply brief at the end of the month, 1st of February, the arguments will be February 8th. We're going to get a decision, I think, you know, before Super Tuesday. Here's my thought. I don't see any way in which the Supreme Court's going to vote in favor of the disqualification line that the Colorado Supreme Court did. If they did, though, okay, these people have suspended their campaigns. They have not closed their campaigns.
Yeah. And again, I think
when
that's...
I say these people, I'm talking about Ron DeSantis, Kim Scott. I mean, right. The whole list of them. Suspended, not closed.
Right. It takes a whole process to actually close a campaign. Can take months. And so that is why they do that. They do that because while at the moment they see no path to victory, they all know that you cannot predict the future. And so no reason to go through the process of closing a campaign. Let's just hold it like it is. And, you know, if something bizarre were to happen, the campaign is set up and ready to go. So I think that's what you would see. If some reason Donald Trump basically had the nomination but then could not fulfill being the nominee.
Yeah, I think that, like I said, by the way, the only way he would be off the ballots would be if these disqualification cases worked.
Right.
Because even if he was convicted on one of these other cases, you're not off the ballot.
No.
Elizabeth from Minnesota is calling. She's online too. Elizabeth, go ahead.
Hey there. So I heard this in the media the last few days. It really kind of floored me. The Biden administration is encouraging people to vote in this primary and write his name on the ballot. And I'm wondering, are they doing that to skew the numbers for the Republican candidate, or are they doing this just to get his name out there and people?
Yeah.
He's not on the ballot in New Hampshire, so it'd have to be a write-in campaign. I think, first of all, it's not his administration, it'd be his campaign. There may be some campaign fund that they're trying to have around, like Joe Biden got more votes than Nikki Haley or something like that. I think that's still unlikely that you convince enough people who are Democrats. But there are a lot of independents there who, again, if they made some... if they somehow made a pitch to them about why that would be so great... And I honestly, the news of tonight is about Republicans. The news is not about Joe Biden. The news tonight is about, does Nikki Haley pull off a miracle, or does Donald Trump basically become the presumptive nominee, regardless of what Nikki Haley's campaign says after we get the results tonight?
We want to encourage you to become an ACLJ champion. We are meeting the challenges. We're able to meet these challenges that are coming our way because of people like you that are supporting the ACLJ on a monthly basis. So become a champion for life, liberty, and freedom. 2024 has already brought us a Supreme Court, unexpected Supreme Court case. The situation in the Middle East, where our team from Europe is fully engaged in that. The Shahzad case, we're filing, and that's in Pakistan, filing a motion to expedite that case, a death penalty case, very, very important. We've also intervened at the UN on that. FOIA requests on the FBI, on the, if you buy a Bible or you're buying sporting goods. All of that's happening right now. Your support of the ACLJ is critical. Become an ACLJ champion today. You fund these legal fights at ACLJ.org/champions.
All right, welcome back to Secular Tour. Take your calls, 1-800-684-3110. That's 1-800-684-3110. And we will continue again to take calls on New Hampshire, your political calls as well, at 1-800-684-3110.
I wanted to give an update, though, on a couple of legal matters that we're handling on the international scene. So this is important. If you get our emails today, you got an email about the Shahzad case. Cece, give a background on what that case is about and what we're up to right now.
Yeah, Shahzad Masih is one of our clients that we handle from our Pakistan office. He was 16 years old when he was falsely accused of blasphemy and was in prison. So he has now been in prison for over 6.5 years. He was wrongfully tried as an adult, even though he was a minor. There were just many things in it. Even the police investigator said he had committed no crime, yet the court found him guilty and sentenced him to death by hanging. And so we are appealing that, obviously, and we've just filed an emergency appeal basically to expedite to hear his case sooner.
What people don't understand, because you think Pakistan, third world, they actually have a court system that functions.
They do have a court system that functions, and
but
so we are
get
able
it to the highest court.
You have to get it to the highest court, and a lot of times the lower courts are so influenced by mob mentality, and we had that in this case. We actually had an imam who is literally on YouTube saying, if the court does not convict Shahzad, we will kill him with our own hands.
Yeah.
And they show up to the courtrooms, and they scare these lower court justices, but when we get to the higher courts, we do find justice, and we want to do that quickly, because he's already been sitting in prison for 6.5 years.
We're going to be making a UN intervention on behalf of another case in Pakistan,
yes,
as well, and that's going to be in Geneva.
We are. Yep. So the 55th session, Human Rights Council session, is being held. It starts February 26th and it'll go through April 5th. We will be there on the ground. We will be making oral interventions for our clients that have been accused of false blasphemy charges in Pakistan.
So full slate of work going on there. Also, our European Center for Law and Justice is in Spain right now. The delegation from Israel has been in England for 2 days. They met with the foreign minister, the prime minister, with some of the hostage families. And there is, pretty much breaking news last night on the hostage situation. And that is, Israel has proposed, which is, people are surprised, but I think they had no choice, a 2-month pause in fighting, 2 months, 8-week pause in fighting in Gaza for the release of all the hostages. And they also would give safe passage to the leadership of Hamas out of Gaza. This is a big development. Whether it'll work or not, I don't know. But it also shows you that militarily, things are very difficult, even for Israel. They've got a major escalation going on the northern border, which would dwarf what Hamas is capable of doing, because Hezbollah's got a lot more munitions and a lot more dangerous missiles and rockets. Also, the Israeli military, I watched I-24 News, which is the Israel news broadcast here in the United States, and they were saying that they think they've eliminated 20 to 30% of the Hamas terrorists right now. But that's after 108 days, Jordan, of fighting door-to-door combat, air, leveling cities, and only 20% of that terrorism, they believe, and that's the Israel's estimate, have been eliminated.
Yeah, and that makes it tougher going to those international institutions, whether it's the International Court of Justice or the ICC, ultimately. When you see the images out of the Gaza Strip and you see how could that only be 20% of Hamas capabilities? I mean, they are still able to fire off rockets. They do have this unbelievable tunnel system, which is much more advanced than I think we all realized. And we saw that you could drive vehicles, big vehicles, through some of these tunnels. You could live in these tunnels for long periods of time, for years, if necessary. So, again, it's just, it is a little shocking, though, to hear that number after you see the amount of destruction in Gaza, and you would think that cleared out more than 20%. But you do realize why the people in Israel want these hostages home, that more than they care about how much of Gaza they've destroyed.
Yeah, I think that, well, the populace clearly, I think, is leaning in that direction, and I think Bibi's government is in serious jeopardy. But it does impact, I mean, the visuals, what I call the atmospherics of a case, really do impact, CC, these international institutions.
And they will use it also because they're already anti-Israel. You know, with when we see the devastation that's happened and it's only 20%, you get concerned because of proportionality. But proportionality doesn't really mean what you think it means.
But in world
you
perception,
can eliminate,
it does.
That's right. You can eliminate the threat, which is what Israel's trying to do. But again, like you said, what you see, then the international tribunals can use that and say, you know, Israel, you've gone too far.
I am as pro-Israel as anybody in the world. And I think that what Israel should destroy Hamas and eliminate the threat completely. But to have done the amount of destruction that's been necessary and only getting 20 or 30% of the Hamas terrorists, maybe that method of engagement isn't working. Yeah. I'm not saying don't do a method of engagement. I'm saying, well, that one's not working. All right, we got a lot of calls. Let's try to get through as many of these as we
can. Yeah, Colleen in Maine on line one. Hey, Colleen.
Hi. I was calling because we have an ongoing situation here. Our Secretary of State has gone on record recently stating that she wants to have the courts rush this through for Trump being taken off the ballot.
Yep.
I guess they're going to leave it on temporarily until they hear what Colorado decides. But in the meantime, she has made the statement that if he is left on the ballot permanently, she is not going to count the vote.
But she can't do that. She can't do that. If the Supreme Court, I'm holding the briefs in my hand.
It's not Colorado anymore.
No, it's now every, listen, the Supreme Court case coming out of Colorado that is now with the U.S. Supreme Court, that we are counsel to the Colorado GOP. I'm holding the Supreme Court briefs. If they rule in our favor, the Secretary of State can say whatever she wants. But let me tell you reality. She has no choice because then she's violating federal law and a Supreme Court mandate. So if we win, they can't do that.
Yep.
Period.
And it's the fight is over in Maine.
Yeah.
And in every state.
All right, let's take another call.
Yeah, we'll go to Jared, Massachusetts, on line three. Hey, Jared.
How are you doing? I had a quick question. So I'm a big Nikki Haley fan, supporter. Yep. But I'm a little bit worried, too, because I know it's a bit of a long shot that she would actually win. But let's just say she does win the primary. Do you foresee that Trump would be able to humble himself and, like, actually take the loss? Or do you think he would just go ahead and go third party and then somehow split Haley and Trump support and then Biden would sneak in with the victory?
I don't think we've gotten far enough down the road to even know his thinking on that yet, because
you also are running late on third party. By the time you go through the process to be a viable third party and get on the ballots, very difficult.
Very, very difficult.
I mean, because you have to, I mean, it'd have to be like the Libertarian Party taking Trump, and that's not going to happen.
No.
So I think, I do think that it's outcome determinative.
Yeah.
That's the way I view it. I mean, anything can happen, but it's outcome determined.
Yeah, and right
primary,
now,
that's the reason we have primaries. And that's the reason, by the way, that states like Colorado shouldn't be meddling in the Republican or Democratic primary. I think we're going to carry the day at the Supreme Court, but I assume right now I'm behind by three. That's how I like to view these cases, even though I'm more confident than that. But you never get overconfident in these cases because they're complex.
Well, I think it's true when you're these campaigns, too. You want to go into these election days with your staff thinking they got to work double the amount, as hard to even get to a victory. You don't want to ever assume you're going to get a victory. You do that and you end up losing. Again, doesn't mean you can guarantee victory by working harder, but you certainly want to leave it all on the table. You heard Ron DeSantis say that. That's certainly how you want to leave campaigns if you are at the end of one. Now, I'm not saying Nikki Haley's 100% at the end of one, but it could be tonight. I mean, this could be the end tonight. It doesn't have to be. It might not be, but it could be. And that's why tonight is even more interesting than usual in New Hampshire, because it's not all about just, okay, what's going to happen in South Carolina? It's going to be whether or not South Carolina even matters.
back.